Blind Cool Tech, number 25, June 23rd, 2005. In 1931, the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, NLS, began offering its patrons reading material. Initially, all this reading material was in the form of Braille, and NLS still distributes Braille today. Within a few years, however, the talking book was invented. Initially provided on a 12-inch hard record that played at 33 RPM, books were somewhat bulky to distribute. Within a few years, NLS developed a 10-inch record that played at 16 RPM and provided twice as much material per record. Still later, a flexible disc was offered that was 8 inches wide and played at 8 RPM. In the 1960s, NLS developed a cassette version of the talking book. And that's what most patrons use today. In 2008, the National Library Service will begin distributing its talking books in digital format. These are known as digital talking books. We'd like to show you an example of how these books work today on Blind Cool Tech. Before we do, however, let's discuss some of the advantages of digital talking books versus cassette or record. One of the most obvious advantages of a digital talking book is the fact that the degradation of the quality is not an issue. Every copy of a digital talking book is exactly the same as the master from which it was created. Secondly, digital talking books do not get scratched, or the tape does not get broken. Perhaps most importantly, digital talking books provide navigation capabilities never possible with cassettes or records. Most digital talking books will have very few navigational points. After all, most of the books NLS produces are novels meant for pleasure reading. Most books will contain navigation points to the beginning of the book, the annotation, the table of contents, and the end of the book. Some books may provide navigation from chapter to chapter. Some books, however, that NLS is producing contain very rich navigation. Examples of such books include cookbooks and magazines. Magazines may offer navigational points from article to article or section to section. Some cookbooks may offer even richer navigation. There may be ways to go from page to page, recipe to recipe, chapter to chapter, and article to article. We'd like to give you a demonstration of both a normal talking book with minimal navigation and some of the more complex talking books today on Blind Cool Tech. Here's the table of contents for an issue of U.S. News and World Report.
Washington Whispers by Paul Bedard. Reading time, 9 minutes.
Next item.
The White House catches gnats fever. Here's why Jeb Bush won't run.
If we want to read that article.
Here's why Jeb Bush won't run. Florida Governor Jeb Bush has for months sternly rejected running to replace his brother in the White House. But only now are we finding out why.
Now we can also move, while the unit is playing, to the next article.
No, a close Bush, Florida. Will Barbara Bush tuck Bubba in? Republican mutterings over former President George...
And then we can go to the next article, of course.
With one-time arch-rival Bill Clinton, our Playboy advisor. Journalism is war. The Afghan foes grow in numbers... Hits Air America to land on Tom DeLay. Imagine some of these titles leaping from bookstore shelves in the years to come.
So as you can see, this is a very convenient way to read a magazine. You can begin an article, and if it doesn't contain anything of interest, it's a simple matter to skip to the next article. Can you imagine reading a magazine like a sighted person does? Moving through the table of contents and selecting the articles of interest?
Table of contents.
Mailbag. Go to people.com. Star Treks. Scoop.
Picks and Pans. Insider. By Katie Holmes. A New Direction.
Well, let's read that article.
Katie Holmes. A New Direction. Reading time, 4 minutes. Getting closer to Tom Cruise, Katie Holmes is finding new friends and embracing Scientology. Wherever Katie Holmes goes these days, Jessica Rodriguez is never far behind.
Now, what happens if we want to speed it up?
For Batman Begins, TV interviews, and autograph sessions, Rodriguez can be found nearby. They're always together, says one source. Indeed, since Holmes met Rodriguez...
Or lower the volume.
...and dating Tom Cruise in April, they've become good friends. They go shopping, they go out.
Or we can return it.
Generating headlines.
Or we can go
while
back to the
fuss,
table of contents.
Bono's campaign for Africa. Alicia Silverstone and Jackson trial. Beating the rap. Reading time, 12 minutes.
Now that's the way to read a magazine. Now another possibility with digital talking books is the idea of having a library.
U.S. News and World Report, March 7, 2005.
Smart Computing.
People, May 30, 2005. People, April 25, 2005.
Now, for instance, what if we want to get rid of some of these old magazines that we're through reading?
People, April 25, 2005.
People, February 28, 2000.
People, March 28,
2005. And
they're gone. People.
So a more common example of a digital talking book that has navigation that you might more regularly see can be found in this book.
Library of Congress Annotation. Prologue. Part 1. Part 2. Book 3. Epilogue. End of Robert Ludlum's Jason Bourne in The Bourne Legacy.
So, of course, when you have your digital talking book player, you can move to any one of these sections.
Part 1.
We'll start with Part 1, and you can just press the play key.
Part 1. Chapter 1. David Webb, professor of linguistics at Georgetown University, was buried beneath a stack of ungraded term papers.
Now, as you're in the table of contents, when you're on Part 1, you can actually look at the subsections in Part 1 as well.
Chapter 2. Chapter 3. Chapter 4. Chapter 5.
In addition to this kind of navigability, some more complex structured books from NLS will contain notes or references or sidebars. And you will actually be able to move from note to note or sidebar to sidebar. What's even more interesting, however, is that you can make that content optional. So as you're playing a book, if you decide you do not want to hear the notes or the sidebars or the page numbers, you can turn each of those features off, and the player will skip right past them. The National Library Service plans to distribute the new digital talking books on a special flash memory cartridge. This cartridge will probably be based on compact flash with a larger case on it to give the patron enough space to put a braille label and enough space to make it easy to handle. The case will also be designed so that it only fits one way into the player. There is also the possibility that NLS will offer a service where patrons can download magazines or books, although such a decision has not yet been made. Again, while this is some exciting technology, it's frustrating for patrons to have to wait until 2008. But if you think about it, this is not really very much time when you have to deal with the complexities involved in the rollout to digital talking books for such a large organization. Consider the number of titles and the number of players in the field that NLS must deal with. In 2008, the National Library Service plans to launch its program with 20,000 digital talking books. And while the expenses seem daunting, eventually moving to this new format will actually save NLS money, while providing you, the blind reader, a much richer experience. We'll have a lot more to say about NLS's move to digital talking books on Blind Cool Tech in future issues. In the meantime, you can check out more information about NLS's plans on the NLS website at loc.gov/NLS. There are some excellent articles about the history and the future of the Digital Talking Book program. And I'd like to play you one article about the history right now.
NL Service prior to 1931, records indicate that library service for blind patrons began in the late 19th century. As early as 1868, the Boston Public Library established a department for the blind after receiving 8 embossed volumes. In 1882, the Pennsylvania Home Teaching Society and Free Circulating Library for the Blind was founded in Philadelphia, and in 1899 was incorporated with the Free Library of Philadelphia. The Chicago Library, in 1894, received a collection of embossed books from a local women's club. The New York City Free Circulating Library for the Blind was organized in 1895 by a blind man who had a private collection of embossed books. In 1903, this collection became the nucleus of the Library for the Blind of the New York Public Library. The Detroit Public Library placed 110 volumes on the shelves in 1896, and in the same year, New York became the first state to create a department for the blind in a state library. Other state libraries soon followed New York's example. Few books were generally available, and with 5 separate embossed systems in use, the number of titles from which a blind person could choose were few indeed. The concept of a National Library for the Blind was developed in 1897 by John Russell Young, the Librarian of Congress, when he established a reading room for the blind with about 500 books and music items in raised characters. In 1913, Congress provided that one copy of each book in raised characters made for educational purposes under government subsidy by the American Printing House for the Blind, APH, in Louisville, Kentucky, was to be deposited in the Library of Congress. Other materials were acquired by gift and purchase. Services, too, were expanding. Instruction was available for those desiring to learn reading by touch, displays were arranged, and plans were developed for exhibiting products made by blind persons. In 1930, identical bills were introduced in Congress by Representative Ruth Pratt H. R. 11,365 and Senator Reed Smoot S. 4030, to provide adequate service on a national scale through an appropriation, to be expended under the direction of the Librarian of Congress. Return to document contents visited link. National Library Service established. The Pratt-Smoot Act became law on March 3, 1931. The Librarian of Congress was authorized to arrange with other libraries to serve as local or regional centers for the circulation of such books, under such conditions and regulations as he may prescribe. On the following day, a joint resolution was passed appropriating $100,000 for fiscal 1932 to carry out the provisions of the Act to provide books for blind adults in the program that would become the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. NLSBPH was established. The book project for the blind adults began operating on July 1, 1931. Its primary concern was selecting titles to be embossed. The annual report of the Librarian of Congress for 1931 stated that by the middle of September, 15 titles were selected as an experimental group, and contracts for the reproduction of them in Braille placed with the 4 American presses submitting proposals to Wood American Printing House for the Blind, Louisville, Kentucky, Universal Braille Press and American Brotherhood of Free Reading for the Blind, Los Angeles, California, and Clover New Printing House for the Blind, Cincinnati, Ohio, the experiment including a need of testing out the relative competence of those several presses. The first order was for Woodrow Wilson's George Washington, to meet a demand created by the commemoration of the bicentennial of Washington's birth. The designation of distributing libraries was less difficult. After consultation with the American Library Association and American Foundation for the Blind, AFB, the librarian selected 18 libraries, in addition to the Library of Congress, because of their ability to provide adequate service and regional coverage of the country. Two important developments occurred in 1933: the establishment of a uniform system of Braille standard English Braille for all English-speaking countries, and the development of the talking book. The second development is described as the recording on a disc of the voice of a good reader, and its reproduction at will through the instrumentality of a reproducing machine or phonograph. Experimentation on the development of sound recordings for the blind had begun many years earlier. Aided by the Carnegie Corporation, AFB and the Braille Institute of America had been researching the development of suitable records and reproducers. Finally, in 1933, AFB produced 2 types of machines, one spring-driven and the other a combination electric radio and phonograph. A durable record was perfected, recorded at 150 grooves to an inch, so that a book of 60,000 words could be contained on 8 or 9 double-faced, 12-inch records. The turntable ran at 3, 3, 1, 3 revolutions per minute, which permitted 30 minutes of reading time on each record. By 1934, the talking book was developed, and the number of reproducers in the hands of blind readers was sufficient to justify using part of the congressional appropriation for purchasing records. Among the titles chosen for the first orders of talking books were the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution of the United States, Washington's Farewell Address, Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, Shakespeare's As You Like It, The Merchant of Venice, and Hamlet, Kipling's Brush with Boy, and Woda House's Very Good Jeeves. The library's appropriation did not at first include funds for machines. They had to be purchased at a cost between $35 and $60, either by the blind person, who desired to borrow the recorded books, or on his behalf, as was frequently the case, by philanthropic organizations. The Basic Act was amended several times, not only increasing appropriations, but also deleting the word adult, on July 3, 1952, thus opening the service to blind children. And in 1962, the program was authorized by Congress to collection and maintain a library of musical scores and instructional texts for the use of blind residents of the United States. Return to document contents. Visited link service extended to physically handicapped readers. Blindness is only one of the disabilities that make a person unable to read printed media. Some individuals who have lost the use of one or both hands are unable to hold a book or magazine or turn pages. Others, whose visual disability does not meet a strict definition of blindness, still cannot see well enough to read standard print. Many persons who had requested talking books were ineligible because the program was specifically limited by law to blind persons. By the end of fiscal year 1966, Congress passed Public Law 8-8-9-5-2-2 authorizing the library to provide talking book services to all persons who could not read standard print because of visual or physical disability. The revised law brought an immediate need for an expansion of program activities. To accomplish this, the book collections in NLSBPH and those in the more than 40 established regional libraries were strengthened by building a reserve collection of books and increasing the number of copies of recorded and braille titles produced. All procedures were re-examined and, where necessary, revised to permit rapid growth in service with a minimum expenditure of time and manpower. An amendment to the Library Services and Construction Act in 1966, Public Law 8-9-5-2-2, aided in the establishment of additional regional libraries. Return to document contents. Visited link development of talking books disc. Until the beginning of fiscal year 1937, there was but one source for talking book records, AFB, which had been instrumental in their development. When the talking book proved successful, however, other philanthropic institutions engaged in providing reading matter for blind people entered the field. Among these was APH, the major producer of braille books for the program. APH made extensive changes in its plant and equipped itself to manufacture talking books, from the recording through the plating and pressing processes. In the first year of operation, fiscal year 1937, APH furnished 32 of the recorded titles distributed by the Library of Congress. There was virtually no format change in the original 3-3-1-3 RPM, 12-inch, talking book records circulated at the inception of the program until 1958, when the Library of Congress negotiated contracts to test the feasibility of using recordings at slower speeds. In mid-1958, two books were recorded at 1-6-2-3 RPM. These prototype records could be played on existing machines. In spring 1962, the Library of Congress began ordering talking books for juveniles recorded on 10-inch records at 1-6-2-3 RPM, and all talking books ordered after January 1963 were recorded on 1-6-2-3 RPM records. This smaller, slower speed disc provided 45 minutes of recorded time on each side of the record, thus reducing the number of records required for each book. The savings affected by the change of speed were used to increase the number of copies of each talking book that could be produced, and to add 5 popular magazines to the talking book program. In 1969, magazines began to be recorded at 8-1-3 RPM, and the recording of all disc talking books at 8-1-3 RPM began in January 1973. Use of these slow recording speeds made it possible to include almost twice as much material as on a disc of corresponding size recorded at 1-6-2-3 RPM. Savings thus effected allowed for an increase in the number of copies issued for each title selected. Since fewer records were required for each book, readers and librarians could handle, store, and ship the 10-inch, 8-1-3 RPM records much more easily and economically than the larger, bulkier records. The Library of Congress program began to use flexible discs in 1968, when a recorded version of the Talking Book Topics section that announced talking book acquisitions was bound in the print edition as an experiment. The format proved overwhelmingly popular and, subsequently, national circulation magazines were recorded on flexible discs. The first national circulation magazine to be produced in quantity on flexible disc was U.S. News World Report. This was done on a subscription basis in 1971 by the magazine publisher. The first national circulation magazine to be produced on flexible disc by the Library of Congress was the popular Weekly Sports Illustrated. The first issues of flexible discs reached readers in the spring of 1972. The 8-1-3 RPM flexible disc was used experimentally for a full-length book for the first time in fiscal year 1972, for Recording Wheels by Arthur Haley. Because flexible disc recordings could be produced quickly in large quantity and at relatively low cost, this format proved highly successful in satisfying readers' demands for popular titles on a timely basis. The economic viability of the flexible disc format was a significant step toward eventual demise of the heavier, space-absorbing rigid disc format. An analysis of the NLSBPH program conducted in 1994 revealed potential for cost savings by shifting the program to a single audio product, cassette. After an analysis of the impact of shifting magazine production from flexible disc to cassette, NLSBPH began to phase out production of national circulation magazines on flexible disc. The shift to cassette format was completed in fiscal year 2001, when all NLS audiobooks, magazines, and program materials were produced on cassette only. Return to document contents visited link talking book machines in 1935. A venture was initiated to meet the need of blind adults, who could not afford to purchase talking book machines, and to provide employment to those receiving financial assistance from the government, as a result of the Great Depression. President Roosevelt allotted $211,500 to the Works Progress Administration WPA for the construction of 5,000 talking book machines for the purpose of enabling the blind to use the books now provided by the Library of Congress. Letter to the Secretary of the Treasury, September 19, 1935. Both an electric and a spring-driven hand crank machine were produced. The machines remain the property of the Library of Congress. The President's instructions stated that the machines were to be loaned by the Librarian of Congress to such libraries as he may judge appropriate to serve as local or regional centers for the use of such book machines under such conditions and regulations as he may prescribe, for the purpose of enabling the blind to use the books for the blind now provided by the Library of Congress. In every state and in several of the territories, agencies were designated for the distribution of the machines. During the years 1, 9, 3, 5, 1, 9, 4, 2 improvements were made in the motor, pickup arm, and amplifier. The manufacture and repair of machines under the WPA project stopped after June 3, 1942, and no machines at all were manufactured for the rest of World War II. New talking book machines from stock continued to be distributed to the libraries, however, and these government-owned disc players, many of which had been in constant use since 1935, when the first lot was distributed, continued to be indispensable to talking book borrowers, who could not play the slow-speed records on ordinary home phonographs. An appropriations for machine repair was approved in 1943, AFB was awarded a contract under competitive bidding, and repaired library-owned machines until the end of the war. In 1946, AFB resumed manufacturing the latest model talking book machine, and the Library of Congress purchased 550. During 1947, the library purchased 3,500 machines manufactured commercially. With its purchase, the Library of Congress, for the first time, was fully committed to providing machines from its own appropriation. From 1, 9, 4, 9, 1, 9, 6, 7 NLSBPH had no testing facility of its own, and relied on outside test centers to perform needed evaluations. Since 1967, the program has had its own research and development facilities, including an anechoic chamber for evaluating machine performance. Detailed specifications, originally developed by AFB and, from 1, 9, 4, 8, 1, 9, 5, to the National Bureau of Standards, were adopted, to which all commercial manufacturers producing talking book machines for NLS must conform. As a result, uniformly high quality and equipment for the talking book program can be maintained. Over the years, improvement of the talking book machine continued. Notable developments include Model D, the 17th disc player, which was introduced in fiscal year 1957. Model D and improved models in the AD series subsequently manufactured through 1964 had two-speed motors to accommodate records at 3, 3, 1, 3 and 1, 6, 2, 3 RPM. In 1965, the A1 talking book machine with a three-speed motor to operate at the additional speed of 8, 1, 3 RPM was put into service. Three-speed motors were installed in thousands of existing two-speed machines by the volunteer group Telephone Pioneers of America, who worked diligently on this project over a number of years. Model A5, introduced in 1968, was the first machine with a transistorized amplifier in a lightweight, colored plastic case. The A5 weighed about 12 pounds, as compared to the early model of 1935 that weighed 30 pounds. It was designed to accommodate optional accessories for greater ease of operation by physically disabled persons lacking digital dexterity. The A70 machine, produced in 1970, had a completely redesigned base to provide greater stability. That model, along with the A71, A72, and A73 produced with funds from those fiscal years, featured three operating speeds 8, 1, 3 RPM, 1, 6, 2, 3 RPM, and 3, 3, 1, 3 RPM. Beginning with the A77 model, and continuing through the A80 model, additional refinements included an automatic cutoff switch that stopped the motor and the turntable at the end of the record, a two-sided needle that could be switched by turning the flip lever, a detachable lid containing a speaker that could be set up separately, and retractable tab guides that helped center the record so that the hole dropped on the spindle. Several years lapsed with no production of talking book machines, then, in 1990, the A1 was manufactured. It differed from the A80 and earlier models in having a variable speed control that allowed discs to be player at speeds faster and slower than normal, and a tone arm equipped with a device for locating the edge of the disc and the grooves leading to the beginning of the recording. Return to document contents visited link cassette books and machines. By 1968, the Philips Norelco type cassette tape system, developed commercially, became recognized as the industry standard. The potential for using the system in the program was quickly recognized. A pilot study was begun in July 1968 to test commercially available cassette players for their suitability in the talking book program. As a result, by the summer of 1969, the Library of Congress had initiated measures to distribute cassette tapes and players throughout the regional library network as a supplement to the talking book program. The first cassette machines produced according to program specifications were contracted for delivery in January 1971. Under this contract, 14,000 cassette machines and two models were produced. Although basically similar in design to cassette equipment on the commercial market, these units included some new features to facilitate use by blind and physically handicapped readers. One of the models, of which 9,000 were produced, was a playback-only unit. This unit contained rechargeable nickel-cadmium batteries. Chargers for the batteries were provided to regional libraries and machine lending agencies so that readers with no access to electricity could mail batteries for recharge. The other model, of which 5,000 were produced, could also function as a recorder and operated on 6C dry cell batteries. These units were intended for students and other readers who needed to record material not otherwise available. Both the play-only and the recorder units were capable of operating at two speeds 1, 7, 8 and 15 16 inches per second IPS. No cassette machines were produced in 1972, as the model designed by General Electric was rejected because it was too big. The C73, C74 and C75 models, produced with funds from those fiscal years, used a four-track system so that a single cassette could provide up to 6 hours of playback. The C76 was the first cassette machine to have automatic shuts-off, a tape motion sensor that would shut off the machine whenever the cassette take-up reel stopped, and a built-in variable speed control. No major changes were made in the models produced from 1, 9, 7, 7, 1, 9, 7, 9. The first cassette title recorded at 15-16 IPS on four tracks was sent to regional libraries for circulation in March 1977. This first title, Roots by Alex Haley, requires five cassettes. Each four-track tape cassette holds 6 hours of playing time, about the equivalent of 200 pages of print. In 1980, a pitch restoration feature was built into the C80 model so that cassettes could be played at fast and slow speeds without a Donald Duck or low-pitch drone effect. In 1981, the standard cassette machine, the C1, began production and continues in production. In 1992, a second manufacturer for cassette machines built to NLS specifications began producing the C2. Both the C1 and C2 are considered the standard cassette playback equipment. Several years in development, the E1 cassette machine began production in 1986. Called the Easy Machine, it has only two main controls, a sliding switch to start, play, and stop the machine, as well as to control the volume, and a push button to rewind tape. Designed for use by patrons, who are intimidated by the standard cassette machine with its many controls, and for those severely physically handicapped, the E1 is a very complex instrument using microprocessors to control the various functions. At the end of each side, the motor reverses, switching the tracks so the patron never has to turn the cassette over to receive 6 hours of listening. Return to document contents. Visited link combination machine, a machine combining the best features of the standard cassette and talking book models, and appropriately named the combination machine CT1, began production in 1991 after years of development. It is equipped with one rewind switch for both tapes and discs. The needle moves backward over the record and for both the record player and the tape deck, with fast forward and variable speed capabilities. Pressing down on the tone arm, rather than lifting it up, removes it from the record, retracts the needle automatically, and prevents damage to the disc. The cover of the CT1 can be closed without removing the needle from the record, and the machine can be moved with no change to the needle's position on the disc. Cassette features include automatic reverse and track switching, so that an entire cassette can be played with no action from the user. Return to document contents. Visited link machine repair. The machine repair program was decentralized in 1958 in an effort to reduce growing backlogs of machines needing maintenance or repair. Major repairs were still to be made a central point, but minor ones such as replacement of fuses, defective tubes, and other parts were to be handled by the distributing agencies. Unfortunately, personnel in the machine lending agencies lacked the technical knowledge to make the system workable. Forced to look elsewhere for a solution, the Library of Congress turned to the Telephone Pioneers of America. In the spring of 1960, pilot studies were undertaken in two machine lending agencies, one in a metropolitan area and the other in a rural community. Under the pilot program, the pioneers, drawing on their technical and electronics skills, made major repairs of machines and trained agency personnel to make minor repairs. By September 1960, both regional agencies declared the study an unqualified success, and the Library of Congress requested extension of the service to other areas. The Telephone Pioneers are now an integral part of the national program, repairing thousands of machines annually and providing more than $2 million worth of volunteer labor. Return to document contents. Visited link multi-state centers. The increase over the years in the number of borrowers, combined with the distribution of more talking book machines and the steady growth of collections, placed a heavier burden on NLSBPH to provide support services to distributing libraries. Therefore, Congress increased the appropriation to the Library of Congress for fiscal year 1974 to provide for two centers serving multi-state areas as decentralized storage and distribution points. Subsequently, Congress provided for two more such centers, and by 1977, all libraries in the national network were served by one of four multi-state centers. These centers were established in response to the serious problems of storage and logistics created by the growth of the program after 1967, without parallel expansion of space at NLSBPH to house, coordinate, and ship reading materials and playback equipment. In 1986, the center serving the southern region was closed due to federal budgetary constraints. In 1990, the center serving the northern region was closed after NLS determined that two strategically located centers could effectively and efficiently supply NLS materials to the network. The Multi-State Center East in Cincinnati, Ohio, now serves libraries east of the Mississippi River, and the Multi-State Center West in Salt Lake City, Utah, serves the libraries west of the Mississippi River. Return to document contents visited link cataloging as a result of a resolution proposed at the Conference on Volunteer Activities in Recording and Transcribing Books for the Blind in 1952. Centralized cataloging was begun for all titles issued as talking books and press braille materials. Adapted cards were printed and distributed to the regional libraries, beginning with fiscal year 1955, the first full year of centralized cataloging of books in braille and talking book formats. The first computer-produced catalog of 1, 6, 2, 3 RPM talking book titles was presented at the 8th National Conference of Librarians Serving Blind and Physically Handicapped Individuals, held in Louisville, Kentucky, May 1, 5, 1, 7, 1972. The catalog included talking books number 1, 3, 3, 7, 4 at the Library of Congress. This printout represented a milestone in the development of a national union catalog of materials for blind and physically handicapped readers. In addition, it was part of an overall investigation of the use of automated techniques to provide timely and comprehensive book production and fiscal management information. The first edition of the computer output microfiche column catalog, reading material for the blind and physically handicapped, and microfiche readers were distributed by the Library of Congress to network libraries early in 1977. This publication, issued quarterly, marked the first step in the creation of a catalog that would be the most complete record available of loan materials in braille and recorded form. In 1992, the first edition of a CD-ROM catalog of loan materials was distributed to network libraries. This catalog could be accessed by patrons as well as by libraries. Return to document contents visited link suggested further reading. More detailed accounts of the developments leading up to the establishment of the NLSBPH program can be found in As I Saw It, by Robert B. Irwin, New York, American Foundation for the Blind, 1955, and The Unseen Minority, by Francis A. Koestler, New York, David McKay, 1976. A full description of the struggle to establish a uniform system of touch reading for blind persons is contained in Irwin's As I Saw It. That All May Read Library Services for Blind and Physically Handicapped People, Washington, D.C., The Library of Congress, 1983 is a collection of original essays on all aspects of the history and then current state of library service to the handicapped population. Talking Books Pioneering and Beyond, by Marilyn Lundell Majeska, Washington, D.C., The Library of Congress, 1988 is a history of the playback equipment and recorded books and magazines in the national program. Return to document contents visited link chronology of developments in the national program. 1931 passage of Pratt's Moody Act establishes a national library program administered by the Library of Congress. 1933 Standard English Braille, the first uniform Braille code for the English-speaking world, is adopted. 1935 The American Foundation for the Blind publishes the first issue of Talking Books Bulletin, later changed to Talking Book Topics. 1935 Funds are allotted to the WPA for the construction of 5,000 talking book machines. 1942 Manufacture and repair of talking book machines by the WPA is discontinued because of the war effort. 1947 The Library of Congress makes first purchase of talking book machines from appropriated funds. 1948 National Bureau of Standards develops specifications for a low-cost, reliable talking book machine. 1952 The word adult is deleted from enabling legislation, making children eligible for service. 1958 Research is undertaken on feasibility of slower recording speeds. 1959 Braille printing houses adopt English Braille, American edition, as the standard for Braille produced in the U.S. Books on open reel tape are circulated to readers as a supplement to the talking book program. 1960 Telephone pioneers participate in pilot machine repair project to handle increasing repair program. 1962 National Music Library services are authorized by Congress. Talking books for children are produced on 10-inch discs at 1, 6, 2, 3 RPM. 1963 All talking books are produced on 10-inch discs at 1, 6, 2, 3 RPM. 1965 A1 talking book machine equipped with a 3-speed motor 3, 3, 1, 3, 1, 6, 2, 3, 8, 1, 3 RPM is put into service. Telephone pioneers begin installing 3-speed motors in thousands of existing talking book machines. First large print music score is produced for the collection by volunteers from Sigma Alpha Iota Women's Music Sorority. 1966 legislation is passed by Congress Public Law 8, 9, 5, 2, 2 to extend free library service to physically handicapped readers. 1968 first transistorized, lightweight talking book machines are produced. All magazines are recorded at 8, 1, 3 RPM. Talking Book Topics becomes first flexible disc magazine. Computers are used for production of press braille. Pilot program is launched to test reader response to cassette books. 1969 cassette books are recorded at 1, 7, 8 IPS on 2 tracks and machines are made available for general circulation. A National Survey of Readers' Interests and Needs is published. 1971 U.S. News World Report on Flexible Disc is made available by subscription from the publisher. 1972 Wheels, by Arthur Haley, becomes the first flexible disc book circulated. Sports Illustrated becomes the first flexible disc magazine produced for the program. A catalog listing 4,000 titles is produced by computer. Plans proceed for a comprehensive catalog of all titles available through the national program. 1973 All talking books are recorded at 8, 1, 3 RPM. 1974 Congress appropriates funds for establishment of 2 multi-state centers. NLS assumes editorial control of Braille Book Review and Talking Book Topics from the American Foundation for the Blind. 1975 Tone indexing is used for the first time for talking books. Cassette books are produced at 15-16 IPS on 2-track tapes. 1976 best-selling books are produced regularly in the flexible disc format. NLS sponsors the development of high-speed braille plate embossers to replace manually operated stereographic equipment. 1977 first edition of the COM catalog, reading materials for the blind and physically handicapped, is distributed to the network. Four-track cassettes are introduced. Roundtable of Libraries for the Blind is organized as part of the International Federation of Library Associations, IFLA. 1978 the Division for the Blind and Physically Handicapped was renamed the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped on June 5. Research and development began on a combination disc cassette machine. Reading material for the blind and physically handicapped was made available for online searching through BRS. Introduction to Braille Mathematics is produced in Braille and a training and certification program for math Braille transcribers begins. 1979 holdings of network libraries begin to be added to the Microfiche catalog, as the first step in planned production of a union catalog. Development of foreign language collection is augmented through addition of foreign language specialist to NLSBPH staff. The American Library Association publishes standards of service for the Library of Congress Network of Libraries for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. 1980 field testing and evaluation of cassette braille machines are initiated. All magazines produced for the program are distributed by direct circulation. Voice indexing is used for the first time, in Talking Books access to National Parks A Guide for the Handicapped Visitors. The first full-time network consultant appointed to assist in coordinating the national effort of over 150 libraries cooperating with the Library of Congress. A national survey to determine extent of the eligible user population is published. Special headset amplifier is made available to hearing impaired readers. Study has begun on reader acceptability of grades 1 and 2 Braille. Computerized mailing list CMLS becomes operational to include all recipients of program materials. C80 cassette machine is produced with built-in pitch restoration for use in conjunction with the variable speed selection switch. 1981 Pilot Braille Production Center is established at American Foundation for the Blind under NLS sponsorship. A second national survey of readers' interests and needs is published. NLSBPH Consumer Relations section is created to strengthen responsiveness to patrons and consumer groups. C1 cassette machine begins production with FAT forward, FAT rewind, end of tape sensor, and a track selector switch. 1982 Evaluation of paperless Braille is published. Solar battery chargers are made available to patrons without access to electricity. Remote control units for cassette and talking book machines are redesigned. New cassette container design is field tested. 1984 Multi-State Center for the South is closed. Standards of service for the Library of Congress Network of Libraries for the Blind and Physically Handicapped is revised by the American Library Association. 1986 E1 Simplified Cassette Machine is produced. 1987 Tactile Map Circulation begins from NLS and a catalog is published listing the holdings. The last RigiDisc title is produced in May. Titles formerly produced on RigiDisc are now produced on cassette. Telephone pioneers reach milestone of 1 millionth repair to talking book machines. 1990 A1 the first talking book machine with a variable speed control is produced. Telephone pioneers complete 30 years of volunteer service in the machine repair program. Study begins on possible Braille and machine lending agency centralization FISI. Standard automated format for Braille books presented to Braille producers. 1991 Multi-State Center for the North is closed. 1992 CT1 the first combination talking book machine and cassette player is produced. Digital recording of books formalized into contracts with producers. Braille centralization study continues phase 2.
I hope you enjoyed this edition of Blind Cool Tech. To leave us a comment, call our comment line at 206-984-9203 or attach it to a message to larskut@gmail.com. This is Larry Skutkan. We'll see you next time.